Certainly start.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Colonel David Devasayam, the Chairman and Managing Director of the Radiant Cash Management Services Limited, and the company was set up in 2005. And as you all know, we listed on the 4th of January this year. So Radiant Cash Management Services has been focused on, it's an integrated cash logistics player, but with a focus on retail cash management. In this we have today close to 40% national market share in this business. I'll request you all to turn, we have placed the printed presentations in front of you. I'll request you all to go to the key strengths of the company. Well, coming on to the opportunity as to what keeps us focused on retail cash management, the whole industry together today is doing approximately 1.5 lakh outlets. And as per the Frost and Sullivan report, we have independently validated there are 30 lakh outlets available which require this kind of services. So it's a very large opportunity, and that's the reason why we stay focused on retail cash management. Please move to the key strengths of the company. As I said, it's a leading integrated cash logistics player in a consolidating industry. Consolidating because RBI regulation has come in. And now we have only six players who are there in the industry. And so that's because of the requirement of a minimum 100 crore minimum net worth and minimum 300 vehicles that you need to have cash trucks. Without that, I mean, you cannot do this business. Pan India presents a strong network in Tier 2 and Tier 3 locations. Over 65% of our revenue comes from Tier 3 plus locations. That's our focus, and these are largely cash-centric even today. And just to highlight to you the cash in circulation, which was at about 13.6 lakh crores in 2016-17, has today grown to 31.5 lakh crores. Cash in circulation really stimulates retail cash management. We have diversified client base with long-standing relationship. Over 95% of our business comes from banks. We have all the major national multinational banks, privatized banks as well as the public sector banks. State Bank of India is a large customer. As you all obviously will say that moving cash and cash logistics, risk is a factor. We have robust operational risk management systems in place. It will be highlighted later. It's led by a retired Director General of Police. And we have a very good track of, we have the minimum cash and transit loss history. Our track record in the industry. It's part of our USP because our risk managers are all ex-service, junior commissioned officers and former police inspectors. Significantly built up technology. They're moving close to 500 crores of cash every day. And as the MDI insists on rupee for rupee reconciliation at the end of the day, and this is only possible with cutting edge technology. So we have our own developed ERP, which is highly respected by the banks. And we also have, with a few banks, we are having API integration with their core banking solutions. So that makes our business extremely sticky. We have had a consistent track record of a strong financial performance, which we'll give you, which the details of it will be given to you. And I'm sure you all have seen the third quarter numbers which we have uploaded in the exchanges as on 28th of last month. We also have an experienced management team, and we were backed by a reputed financial institutional investor, Ascent Capital, who are partially now diluted after the listing. So these are the key strengths of our company, and we'll be open to, you know, during the course of the presentation, which will be done by Muthuraman, our head of strategy and investor relations. You can always stop and ask any questions if you have any doubts at any point. It's over to you, Muthu.
Thanks, Kanal. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking time. I'll go through some of the basics of our business because it's hardly any peer group and you may not understand the nuances. For those of you who are familiar, please bear with me for repetition. Over 95% of our business comes from banks. Banks offer doorstep banking as a value-added service to its customers and in turn mandates Radiant to provide that service. So the banks offer this to various end customers across sectors. If you go to slide 5, gives the sectoral breakup. About 30% of our business comes from BFSI, 15% from organized retail, about 25% from e-commerce and e-commerce logistics, about 4% from railways, 2.5% from petroleum. Petroleum used to be slightly higher share, it has slightly come down now, I'll explain. And balance 25% from others. These others would include a whole host of end users like education institutes, schools, colleges, pharmacies, government e-seva centers, even government alcohol beverage outlets, and a whole host of places where, I mean, couriers, travel agents, it is offered to a wide set of end customers. So to these end customers, through banks, we offer these five core services: cash pickup and delivery, network cash management, cash processing, cash and operations, and other value-added services. Cash pickup and delivery is the crux of the business. 68.8% of our business comes from cash pickup and delivery. I'll explain it with a simple example. Take an example of, say, you order something from Amazon. And you pay the guy cash on delivery. So the Amazon has mandated, let us say Deutsche Bank, that they need doorstep banking. That is that, see, the guy who picks up from your residence is not going to deposit that cash in the bank. He will give it to the dark store or a warehouse where he's picked up the cash from. So Amazon mandates Deutsche Bank, and Deutsche Bank in turn mandates Radiant. So we go on a daily basis to the dark store or a warehouse and pick up that cash. We never do, our business is 100% B2B, we never go to somebody's house to pick up cash. So we pick up from the dark store and deposit in Deutsche Bank, for which we charge, in this case the Deutsche Bank, a fixed amount per point per month. A fixed amount per point per month.
Just one thing, this fixed amount, is it like set to revision at some frequency or it's always like...
Yeah. So we enter into slightly long-term contracts with banks. Typically, some are 1 year after renewal, most are 3 years and then thereafter renewal. There is no built-in escalation clause in our contracts. We do get occasional escalations based on labor cost increase, fuel increase, etc. But that is not certain, it's not an annual effect.
Sure.
And but our pricing is based on two metrics. So we don't negotiate pricing for each point. It is entered as a long-term contract with a matrix which determines the daily, what is the daily cash limit and where is it located. It is located within city limits, beyond city limits or far off locations, the pricing increases. And from daily cash limit from as low as 50,000 to as high as 1 crore per outlet per day, the pricing increases. So any new point that gets added, will automatically fit into this matrix and will start charging that price from the next month onwards.
Your pricing is not dependent on the number of transactions. It's fixed to the
same. Not number of transactions in the sense we pick up from them every day. It could be 50,000. So imagine if it is a 2 lakh limit pharmacy. Someday we pick up 10,000, someday we pick up 25,000, someday we pick up 1.5 lakhs. And then, but at the end of it, we will charge a fixed amount, say 4,000 rupees per month for the pharmacy. That's how it is.
4,000 per
month for the outlet.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm just giving an example.
No. So, you don't charge on a percentage basis, percentage
no,
of collection.
That's what I'm saying. Fixed amount per fixed point amount. Per month. For the first business, as in for this network, cash pickup and delivery, it is fixed amount per point per month. There are some additional charges, as in if they give 2 lakh limit and someday they do limit bursting, we will charge limit burst charges, etc. But the crux of it is the fixed amount per point per month. So the driver, the revenue driver for this particular segment of revenue is purely the number of points that we add. The more number of points that we add, higher will be the revenue. More number of points that we add in tier 3 plus locations where it is far off locations, higher revenue will make. And more number of points which are high value points like petrol bunks, jewelry, etc. that we add, it will have higher impact on revenue. So that is the growth driver for the first segment. The second is network cash management. It's a unique segment in this industry, so I'll take a few minutes to explain. Imagine the same example. We pick up from Amazon in a tier 3 location. Obviously, Deutsche Bank doesn't have a branch there. So where do we deposit? We deposit in our own bank account. So Radiant has over 1,000 collection accounts across the country. We deposit in our own bank account and then electronically transfer to the Deutsche Bank in this instance in its working day. This is the additional value added service that we provide for which we charge them extra. This charge is purely volumetric, based on the amount of cash that you are depositing. Okay. And we incur some costs also. If you see in our expense schedule, there's the bank charges. The bank charges are largely towards paid to these various collection accounts for depositing cash. And so this segment accounts for about 18.3% of our revenues. The third segment is cash processing. So for every point that we pick up, we give the outlet a choice of whether they give us as a sealed bag or ask us to count and verify then and there. If they ask us to count and verify, we charge them cash counting and verification charges, which is about 5% of our revenues. The fourth is cash van operations. So this is what is commonly understood as CIT, cash in transit segment. Wherever the banks require bulk movement of cash, say from RBI vaults to bank vaults or bank vaults to bank branches or between one branch to the other, they just simply hire vans. Van means it's a full crew. Armored van, armed guard, driver, cash custodian with CCTV, with GPS, with geofencing, tubeless tires, there's a specification, set of specifications. We rent them vans on short-term or long-term basis and we charge them a fixed amount per point per month for a specified amount of hours, like 8 hours, 80 kilometers per day, or 2,000 hours per month, like that, 2,000 kilometers per month. And then anything extra that they use, we will be charging them additionally. So that is cash on operations, it's about 5.6% of our revenues for this 9 months. Last is other value-added services. We have safes, vaults, strong rooms in 56 locations. Where we allow banks or other jewelers and others to store cash, charged based on the duration and quantity of amounts this thing is stored. And man behind counter, where we provide our trained manpower at the end customer premises for handling high volume of cash where there's a good footfall. So that is the man behind counter where we charge a fixed amount per person per month. So that compresses our revenue categorization. I think slide 6 I've covered in detail.
So would it be fair to understand that your network cash management would be 100% EBITDA margin profit? Because
no, we incur bank charges, right?
Okay.
So if you see our expense schedule, there's a bank charges. That is the only direct cost.
But that will be the highest margin revenue.
Yeah, in a sense, yes. But that can, assuming that you don't apportion any other cost to it. If all the costs are apportioned to cash pickup and delivery, then that is a high gross margin business. So that cannot stand alone. I cannot offer network cash management alone without charging them cash pickup and delivery.
Right.
It's an ancillary service.
Yeah, that's why I was saying that.
But yes, it is a high gross
18.3% of your revenue, so I assume that...
That's a fairly healthy gross margin. So is cash processing. For example, the same person who is picking up the cash is going to count and verify as well.
Yeah.
I'm not going to incur any additional cost for that. Yes, I mean, instead of picking up 25 points, probably he'll be able to do only 20 points. Because if he's going to count and verify, the time taken for that could be affected. But factoring that in, as in the sense, we typically have reasonable amount of redundancy in every route that we have. If you see our disclosures, we are at about roughly about 60,000 points, and we are roughly about, say, 7,000 cash executors. So that translates about 8 points per cash executor. And there are cash executors who can do up to even...
Since you mentioned this, so you are increasing the touch points every year by 15-20%.
We are adding about 1,000 to 1,200 points every month.
So where can this number go? So how do you see this number?
Yeah, I'll just come to that. Because the market is 30 lakh outlets.
Correct.
Today the entire industry is doing only 1.4 lakh outlets.
Correct.
So which means there is no limit to where it can go.
So you map it with the number of outlets in terms of the...
This is actually the number of outlets.
Okay.
60,000 is the number of outlets.
So when we say 30 lakh outlets, what are the things that we are including here?
Yeah. So our RHP has a detailed breakup given by Frost & Sullivan, but we have our own estimates. Just think of it. India has 85,000 petrol bunks. Every petrol bunk is a potential customer. Today we are not servicing public sector petrol bunks because those are only 1% of it is COCO, company owned, company operated. Rest are all operated by the individual franchisees. So for us to reach them, then we have to go individually to them, right? Or the bank should offer them. India has 1.2 crore retail outlets. This 30 lakh is actually what we think is eligible to use a service of this nature. Okay. And so 85,000 petrol bunks are there. 3 lakh jewelry outlets are there. We have over 100,000 electronic stores are there, which sells mobile phones, TV, fridge, etc. 100,000 are there. We have 100,000 that e-seva, every state has 5 to 6,000 outlets of that e-seva, common service centers. So like that, if you add, it adds up to about 30.
Sure.
Pharmacies, I mean, there are like zillions of pharmacies, but only organized pharmacies. Just one outlet, Apollo Pharmacy alone, announced their 5,000th outlet now. Okay. Retail. Reliance Retail is, as in, they're targeting to reach, add 7 outlets every day. Okay. To reach about 35,000 outlets. Today we are servicing early some 3-4,000 outlets for them.
Sure.
So you said our 60% revenues are from tier 2 or tier 3, right? And how many banks are we tied up with right now?
37 banks.
So this 37 banks doesn't have this service at all? Cities they are not providing
that? You are cutting it differently. The end customers or the pickup points are in these tier 3, tier 4 locations.
Right.
Where the banks have presence. As in we are 95% of our revenues come from banks only. So banks only offer this service in the tier 3 and tier 4 location.
Yeah. So they outsource it to you guys.
Yeah. So the question is already answered in slide 7. That is the total potential market is 30 lakh outlets. Today, likely to become 40 lakh outlets by 27 as per Frost & Sullivan estimates. And the entire industry is doing
40 lakh by?
27. There is a potential market size. Whereas we are doing 1.4 lakh outlets. As in, so there is no limit for growth of number of points. Caveat here, as in a sense, if you see our clients, we service almost all clients in foreign banks, among foreign banks, almost all clients in private sector banks, but only SBI in public sector bank.
And SBI is our largest client?
SBI is among our top 5 clients, among our top 3 clients.
Because when we see in our presentation, the largest client accounts for 19% of our revenues, right?
No, 14%.
14% of our revenues.
That's not
SBI.
No, but very close. I mean, if you see top 3, it is 41%. It is 14 into 3 is 42. So top 3 are more or less similar size.
And when we work with these banks, there would be other service providers also, right? Which provide them cash logistics services.
Yes.
Then can you like talk about, you know, what differentiate us from them and why would, you know, we have a...
I'm just coming in a few minutes. The
sure.
presentation itself covers that. Our right to win.
Sure.
Yeah. So the market size is large and the strong tailwinds are, one, growth in cash in circulation, two, growth in organized retail, three, high share of cash on delivery in e-commerce logistics, which itself is growing at a healthy pace. These are strong tailwinds that help our growth. Yeah. So if you go to slide 9,
from that pharmacy example you were giving, yeah. So it would be the pharmacy would be paying you or you'd be receiving it from the bank?
Yeah. 97.2% to be precise is banks.
Okay.
Only 2.8 is direct customers. No, they may not be pharmacy.
Okay.
We have given names of our direct customers, Decathlon, Shadowfax, Hyloop Logistics, these are all some of our direct clients. But the focus is that we've hired a senior resource to head our new initiatives with the focus of growing our direct clients business, particularly along our existing routes. If you could look at slide 9, it answers why our right to win. We have the strongest network in terms of...
Sorry, so this mix will remain the same or how will this change? 97 and 2%?
We are expecting that the share of direct clients will continue to increase. In fact, between last year and this year, it has gone up from 1.6 to 2.5. We expect it to steadily increase. I can't put a number to that.
Can it go to double digit next 2-3 years?
In 3 years, double digits could be a challenge.
So with these banks, what's the mechanism to get them on board? Is it a tender route wherein, or because there will be other guys who will also be going
except forward. Public sector banks, which have to be mandatorily go through tender route. All other banks are, other in the sense, the empanelment is a very long drawn process. It takes about 5 and 6 months to get empaneled. And there are only 6 players who qualify to provide the service.
Mm.
That is minimum net worth of 100 crores and minimum fleet size of 300 vans. There are only 6 players who qualify to get this service, to provide the service. And so banks have their own, see our strongest USP is our
30.
Strong network.
Is 30,
yeah. See, what happens is, say imagine a client comes, say it's a pizza client, Pan India pizza chain, 700 outlets, and they ask us for a feasibility. We will say we can give feasibility for 680 points. If it a competitor says he doesn't have this strong network, he will say he will do feasibility for 600 points. The third player is a distant third. He will say I have feasibility only for 400 points. So obviously because of our strong network, it becomes a natural choice for them to go for. See, it is the nature of this industry is like a public utility. It is a natural oligopoly business, not only in India, most parts of the world. Top 2 players will account for a bulk of the share. Take US, Brinks will be the largest player, probably Loomis will be second largest and they will account for a significant share of the market. Like that, every country, top 2 players will account for a bulk. Because say for example, if I invest in a route infrastructure and the second player invests in the route infrastructure, there is limited economics for the third player to come and do. See, my cost of servicing a single outlet will not even, as in my price that I get from a single outlet, may not even cover my direct costs. So unless I have a density of that route, my profitability depends on the density, route density. So for somebody to come and instantly get that route density is difficult. So already the existing players with routes automatically have an inherent advantage to get more and more.
And who is the second player in our industry?
we cannot give the thing. There are, again, I'm sure there are public research information. There are only six players in that industry. Again, our RHP carries the competitor.
So the top
point-wise data is given in the RHP. So at the time of filing the RHP, the second largest was CMS. Then the distant third was Writer Software.
So the, you know, top two players, how much market share they would have typically, both in the global markets and Indian markets?
And then it will be in the range of 70-80%.
Sure.
Sir, would we have a geographic, strength, say, one player would have a strength in South?
We are present in every district in the country except Lakshadweep. We cover 13,700 pin codes out of India's 19,000 odd pin codes. And so we have pan-India network everywhere, even in Kashmir, Srinagar or Rajasthan we pick up. Northeast we have a very strong presence, we pick up. West, south, center, everywhere we have a fairly strong presence.
Density is only based on the volume of business at that location. We are completely agnostic to any region.
And currently for next stage, how is the cash circulation industry growing?
I don't understand the question.
How is the industry growing for next 3 years?
The industry as a whole has grown at about high teens, about 18-19% for the last several years.
And it will grow at the same pace, right?
We, being a market leader, we expect that to grow at a slightly higher pace than the industry.
So two things. One, like when we say, you know, the currency in circulation of course has grown. However, when you look at the mix of currency among the, all the payment systems, like say NEFTs, UPIs of the world, it is kind of stagnant or coming down, right? So in that sense, from a longer term perspective, with newer ways of payment, digital ways of payment, do we see a risk to our business in terms of growth? Of course, the growth that we are seeing, large part of it is market share gains, which is kind of, you know, we're adding new touch points and getting that system from the unorganized place. How does, you know, the longer term growth perspective for our industry, you know, looks like? That is point number one. Second is, as I was asking earlier, what is our right to win? Like, you know, what are the things that would separate us from others? Given the fact that if there's a irrational player who is, you know, kind of not looking at profits for foreseeable future, what are the things that will protect our market share from them?
Okay, I think I'll take it on. Question.
Sure.
One is regarding the coming of UPI and all is always spoken about.
Okay.
Part of our discussion. See, earlier the government in the country, there were not many options available for transactions. So it's a good thing that the government is doing that. Other options are also being generated. And digitized transactions are happening, and particularly during COVID time and all, they gained a lot of popularity.
Sure.
In 2020 numbers we have crossed in Sullivan that the level of digitized transactions were about 11% and 89% were still cash transactions. Cash, how we understand it, is the cash in circulation. Cash in circulation was, you know, as I said, 30.6 lakh crores in about 2016. Today it is 31.5 lakh crores, growing to 41.5 lakh crores by 2025. So it's steadily growing. It's about 14% of the GDP. You'll find that is surprisingly, globally also, almost in all the economies, including Germany and US and all, cash as a segment of GDP is also growing.
If you
so,
can see, slide 8 has that chart. Cash in circulation as a percentage of GDP for every country has gone up between FY20 and FY10 and FY21.
So the only difference there is, you know, globally we don't have UPI, right? UPI is something that is very unique to India in that sense. So the propensity of people using, say, UPI on a petrol pump is much higher in India.
Even in India, say FY17 to 22, if you see, at the time when the UPI has grown at a breakneck speed, cash in circulation has also grown at a very healthy pace.
So that is one. And other examples I can give from our own business, like last year we did 1,30,000 crores.
Sure.
The whole year. Now the first 9 months we've done 1,18,000 crores. Likely to grow to 1,60,000 crores. That's what we are seeing in our own business in terms of the cash volume that we are encountering at different places.
Okay.
Then other thing is cash on delivery. You know, even in tier 1 location, cash on delivery today is 50%. So that's an indication of a low trust society where we like to handle a particular product, check it out, and then pay for it. And when it goes to tier 2, tier 3 location, it goes up to 90%.
Okay.
So cash per se is, I mean, there must be different options for transaction. And that is what is currently happening. And we don't foresee any, you know, impact on the business because we are observing the numbers and the way that cash is being transacted by us currently. Second, regards to the aspect of competition, our USP is that 21% of our workforce, including the leadership, is ex-service. That is our big, you know, so in terms of integrity, dedication, and also in terms of frugality, that is part of our DNA. We always drive, whatever we do in the armed forces, we drive everything with a great deal of frugality. So that is the culture and the DNA of the company. That's resulted in good financial performance as a consequence. Second thing is risk management. We are the best cash in transit. That's a very big thing for all the banks. We have minimal cash losses. Like last year, if you look at a agro, we moved 1,30,000 crores, 2.6 crores of the gross cash loss. And actual impact on the P&L was less than 1 crore.
Sure.
So that's a USP. And to build this track record, somebody can't suddenly come just because you're 100 crore minimum metro, the 300 vehicles. You cannot change this track record which is built over many years of consistently. All our initial clients are still our clients. And we have that kind of a very deeply embedded relationship with them based on our track record. And we're handling a huge amount of public money. We've got to be a great deal of trust. That's a USP, and that's the competitive difference that we have.
Sure.
Just would like to add a small point. See, 31.5 lakh crores of cash in circulation. And that means with a velocity of money of about 5.5, that's 180 lakh crores of cash transactions in a year. All the players put together are handling less than 4 lakh crores. Okay, that's about 2%. So even if cash in circulation doesn't increase from here on, it will take 40 years for us to reach 100% penetration. So that is the kind of under-penetration today for the service in terms of cash handling. Similarly, on the market side, I told you, 30 lakh outlets going to 40 lakh outlets as eligible customers, all the players put together handling 1.4 lakh crores. So provides a huge opportunity to grow our business. Yes, at the margin, UPI versus digital versus cash transactions, etc., the 31.5 lakh crores may not become 50 lakh crores, may become 40 lakh crores. But for us, even at today's 31.5 lakh crores, we are still at 2%, we are handling 2%. So there is no dearth of market in that sense for us to worry about.
Industry handling 4 lakh, you said, right?
Yeah. We handled 1.3 lakh crores last year. The entire industry actually will be handling less than 4 lakh crores.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. And with the banks, like, we are, you know, tied up in, how does the economics work? Is it like, we'll be handling particular branches, or it would be the some share of their, you know, or they will allocate certain customers to you, like between the competition, because they would generally have more than one service provider, right? How does that, you know, works?
We have a customer, a large customer. Sometimes the customers themselves don't like to have more than one service provider.
Okay.
So we have like the largest e-com customer we have. They wanted only one service provider. Some are truly large clients. Some retail clients are growing, you know, at very rapid rate, 7 stores per day. They would like to have more than one player, so normally they have typically 2 players.
Sure.
And they'll not also restrict themselves to one bank, they'll have multiple banks. So finally you have 2 players but coming from multiple banks.
Okay.
So that's how it works.
And pricing for most of these players would be similar to ours.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Our pricing across banks and for each bank, pricing across competitors are more or less likely to be the same.
And the unit economics are also same per month per...
Largely. The pricing mechanism as well as...
So the throughput will be the density of a route. That will define how much profitable one player is.
Density of route for the first segment, volume of cash that we handle for the second segment, second and third segment. If you go to slide 10, that gives a broad breakup of our customers, 58% from private banks, 25% from foreign banks, 14% from PSU, and about 3% direct clients.
Sure.
So if you see top 5 private sector banks, the market capitalization are our clients, largest public sector banks are our client, most large foreign banks operating in India are our client, many direct clients are there. Customer concentration, 14% is the largest customer, 39% is the top 3 customers. So you can sense that top 3 are more or less similar.
In PSU, you have only SBI, right? So, any conscious reason why only SBI in the PSUs and not others? Because it could be a tender route and you would almost qualify for all tenders.
SBI, you know, the surprising thing was that there was one gentleman called Mr. Kulkarni here in Bombay. So, sometimes there's a power of one. Like, he wanted to compete with the privatized bank individually. So, when we met him at that time, he just that's why if you see there will be a cash management, you know, complete department, a separate building has been set up at Hyderabad. This bank took it up as a challenge that they would provide the rest of, you know, cash resources across the country, led by this one individual from Bombay, and he flew across all the different centers, different clusters and circles, got it moving. So that's what gives me hope that this will very soon percolate to the other.
Yes.
And that's a huge, because today over 65-67% of our, of the overall banking is done with the national banking, I mean the public sector banks. So that's a huge and you know, a real opportunity that is there. We are now currently empaneled with most of the large banks, but the volume of business is just a trickle. So all together is coming to about 1 crore monthly. That's how it is.
See, the public sector banks except SBI don't even offer this as a service to their end customers. It is not that they are doing it themselves or they are doing it through other competitors. They don't even offer this as a service to their end customers. They expect the banks to come, the customers to walk into the bank branch and deposit. That is the traditional way of thinking. See, who would have thought 5 years back you can order pharmacy at your home, groceries at your home, food at any time at midnight and at 12 o'clock, all that. So obviously the end customers will start demanding that bank come to their premises to collect cash for a period of time, and competitive pressures will force them to start offering this as a service sooner than later. We are already empaneled with Punjab National Bank, Bank of Baroda, Bank of India, most of the public sector banks. But the volume of business sector is very small. But they will start offering this as a service, in which case that will provide us for a further impetus for growth.
So, do you believe your fleet is in your subsidy, right?
No, I'll just explain that. It's not a subsidy, it's a group company. I'll just couple of more points and I'll come. Operational
offering this service and a bank offers this service to their customer, how much would it cost a bank?
The bank charges the end customers correspondingly.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's an entire pass.
Yeah. They may offer for the first year, they may offer it for free as an entry strategy or anything like that, but otherwise it's a profit center for the bank. So Colonel mentioned operational risk management, this is our strongest USP. As in, anybody can put up 100 crores of net worth. But to build a team, see, we are handling 500 crores of cash every day by 9,000 people across 5,400 locations. We have branches only in 18 locations, but we have people handling cash in 5,400 locations. And cash is cash, anybody can walk away, right? So unless you have a robust operational risk management in place and across the hierarchy trusted people with background verification, police verification, a strong risk management team, this business could quickly go haywire, right? As in, see, put things in perspective, our net worth is 220 crores. We handle 500 crores every day. So the trust that we earn with the banks cannot be easily replicated. So that's a strong USP. the other side of the risk management is technology. As in, we are considered a market leader in the industry in terms of technology rollouts. Features that we have introduced have become industry standards subsequently, like customer PIN, OTP, QR code scanning. All of these have now become industry standards. One other thing that we offer, as in which we think is helping us retain many of our clients as well as end customers, is we provide API integration with core banking solution of banks. So once the API integration is done, difficult for banks to move around the thing. Similarly, we provide separate plugins for end customers. So the end customer may come to us through three different banks, but they want us to collate all of that and give them the report at the end of the day, every day. So such kind of plugins, once we do that, the stickiness with the end customer also improves. That helps us in continuing relationship. Board, you know, I mean, Colonel David and Dr. Mrs. Renuka David as promoter nominees, Mr. Vasant Kumar as representative of Ascent Capital, and the three independent directors, Ms. Jayanti IAS, former Chief Secretary, Mr. Ashok Kumar Sarangi is ex-RBA, 30 years plus in RBA, handling cash management in RBA to provide oversight and operations. Colonel Devra Janbu is a former Vice Chief of Army Staff, highly decorated officer, so he will provide operations on oversight on the risk management operations of the company. A strong second level management team we have, and most of whom are from armed forces. Colonel Benz Jacob, again 25 years in the Army, physically in Army Logistics Division, supported by Colonel Kamra. And Mr. Alexander David, son of Colonel David, is already involved in the business for the last 12 years. He's General Manager of Operations. Commander Shashank Naidu is Director for Audit. Swamidas is 37 years in RBI. He's Director of Banking, helps us in our network cash management business, relationship with banking. CFO is Mr. Venkat Ramanan, Standard Accountant, Cost Accountant, Company Secretary. Like I said, we've added a Chief Business Officer recently to focus on our direct clients specifically. So we expect that share of the direct business will improve over a period of time. Yeah. Coming to the financial performance, you asked a question about the fleet. Okay. So the EBITDA margin that you see, we don't own any vans till really recently. Today we have a small number of vans in our books. The IPO proceeds will be used for adding about 220 vans. We have placed orders for about 40 now. This year should come in. The balance 180 over the next year, and that's among the first time that we are buying vans in our books. Otherwise, the vans are taken on operating lease from a group company, Radiant Production Force. The results are disclosed in the public domain, where the van, guard, driver, the entire crew are posted there. And they also don't own those vans. They in turn take it on lease from NBFCs, like there's a lease plan and a few others from whom they take it on this thing. It's a back-to-back cost plus 9% arrangement with the Radio Protection Force. And so purpose is that PSARA license, anybody who, if you employ a person with an armed guard, you have to get a license called PSARA, Private Security Agency Regulation Act license. And that is easy to get if it is domestic owned and if it is through an approval route if there is a foreign investor in the company. So it's a standard industry practice that to host that in a separate company. Every deal in the industry does that. So we have done that with a standard cost plus 9% margin.
So now why we are buying it in this entity?
Sorry?
Now why we are
no, buying? So only the vans we are buying now as a risk mitigation strategy. 20% of our fleet, if you own in our own books, we hire a lot of ad hoc vans. Second is, we have seen in the instances in the industry, not specifically to us, that there could be some of the vendors whose labor go on strike or something like that. We don't want our operations to get affected. Having a 20% of your own fleet will help mitigate that risk. And it's a very small investment, about 22 crores or so we are investing for our own fleet. And I don't think we'll be continuously investing in our vans. Our main strategy continues to be still taking it on operating lease. It's just a one time to, as a risk mitigation strategy, we wanted to own a small fleet ourselves to increase our presence also in the cash in transit segment.
So you will own it and then lease it out to the...
No. We will own it and then we will lease only the balance crew, guard, driver, and...
But you can't have the armed force, right? Because you don't have the license.
So, see, the van can be in our books. The guards will still be taken in the radio protection force and then taken on...
Why not get the license in army?
See, it is an individual state-wise license and it costs and it is time-taking. Since we have license in every state already in the crew company and it's a cost plus 9%, and if you see that, there is hardly any profits left. That 9% is towards the administrative cost as well. So it functions as an integrated unit at this point. In terms of some of the operating metrics, if you see slide 16, 13,000 PIN codes, 59,700 touch points, 5,500 locations, 1.17 trillion of cash handle, 67% of revenues from tier 3 plus locations, 840 fabricated vans. Please note, out of this 840, roughly about 10% will be used for our cash in transit business, which is the fourth segment. The rest of it is used for our regular operations, cash flow. 9,200 employees and contractual workers. All of this have translated into about 25% EBITDA margin, 17% PAT margin, 33% ROC on an annualized basis, and 27% ROE on annualized basis for the 9-month period. Yeah. A particular importance is the cash flow from operations after making working capital changes for that 9 months is about 42.5 crores, a growth of 37% over the same period last year, where it was only 31 crores.
Can you spend some time on our working capital cycle, how it works?
No inventory, only debtors. And the debtors is typically will be about 70 days, 70 to 75 days.
Okay.
Why it is long, it looks appears high, because just have to correct it, as in the debtors that you see on the books includes GST. You have to adjust for that and you are computing the base calculation, and the billing cycle is, say, from first to 30th of the month, whatever service that we provide, we will get the data from various branches, locations, and validate with our daily ERP and send a draft invoice or the workings to the banks by, say, 7th or 8th of the month. Some branches are organized regionally, some are organized centrally. They will respond with the calculations by about 17th. And then only by 18th or 20th, we will raise the actual invoice. From that point of time onwards, they have 30 to 45 days to pay. And mostly they pay on time. So that's how it adds up to about 65 to 70 days.
Is there any room for you to improve your part of the days?
There is. We are working on it, but we will not be able to commit a number where we will be able to go towards. But yes, when we are a private limited company, there is no such scrutiny. But today we understand that this is an important area that where we can conserve more cash. We are working on some initiatives to reduce it. And see, the point is, the process that we have done this ensures that there is no bad debts. If you see our last this thing, since we send it to the banks and banks confirm the amount, so all the disputes about some person didn't turn up at this point, or the extra limit bus charges that you have charged are not correct, all that, etc., are resolved in the 10 days process. They're back and forth. So that when you raise that invoice and pay the GST, there is no question of disputing that amount. So that amount gets collected without fail. But for that accuracy, we are giving up on some days of working capital. We are looking at ways to improve that, where it can be a running account and we can continue to raise based on our estimate, and if there are any disputes, can be adjusted on a rolling basis in subsequent invoices.
What that tells me is that your internal controls, when you raise the invoice, it should be accurate anyway.
Of course.
Why do you have to go back and forth?
So no, sir. From our perspective, it is accurate.
Yeah.
But they say that was this cash executive did not turn up the day. Okay. So out of 26 days, he has turned up only for 24 days. 2 days, he didn't come. if that is their claim, bank's claim, then we have to go back to the scene and verify. He might have had a vehicle puncture, he might have had an accident, he might have fallen sick that day. Something could have happened where he did not this thing. Or the bank is, the bank concerned person is not reporting correctly. Or he might have closed his shop and gone. When we went to go to pick up, if the shop is closed, what do we do? As in, we usually, there is no cash, they will give something called an NCR, no cash receipt. Okay, so we have to visit and they may not, they may still not have cash and give a no cash receipt, in which case we can still bill. But if they are locked, what do we do? It's a matter of opinion. As in, he said that you should have come before 12 o'clock to collect. We will say, well, no, we came at 12:30, the shop is locked. So all this, this is operationally highly intensive business. It's nothing to do with our internal controls or the risk management practice.
So as per the management team, what is the biggest risk that we see in our business?
Biggest risk, you know, in our business only is cash and transit loss. So that was our first priority. So that's why we have put in the resources. The ex-service, almost all the risk manager, ex-service, or the ex-police inspectors.
Sure. And
so
in terms
we don't remain, we don't wait for an incident. We are constantly in touch with all the SPs of the districts.
Sure.
And the moment there is a, you know, and then we have a national operational center, the vehicle moment is being consistently monitored. Even if the vehicle stops or it goes off track, immediately there is a red flag.
Sure.
So that we have mitigated it, you know, it's driven like a military operation.
Sure. And in terms of, say, disruption or, you know, competition, do we see any risk, whether in terms of growth or our profitability?
Not really. I don't see, at least for the next 2 to 3 years.
Sure.
I can't put a finger on any kind of. We're on to a certain trajectory now. It's like a treadmill and it's constantly and it's moving forward.
Sure.
So, is there any way we can insure? Is there any insurance policy wherein cash and transit?
Yes, the whole thing, that's the first part of risk mitigation. Every single segment of the movement, the movement of personnel and their individual safety, is fully insured.
And what will be the distance normally covered by your fleet from one location to the bank branch? What is it normally do?
Normally not more than one way. Maximum distance would be over 30 kilometers.
That is for the full route.
Route.
See, our the contract is that the bank branch should be within 5 kilometers of that outlet for us to have the basic for the basic pricing. If it is more than 5 kilometers, it moves to the next lab. But within city limits, beyond city limits, far off locations.
When you say this touch point of cover or touch point of need, so you operate typically small branch or what is it?
Sorry.
So when you say touch points covered, so is it what a particular branch you're opening or what is it?
These are the outlets from where we pick up.
Only the, okay,
you say
the
for example if it is 700 pizza outlets,
okay,
it will count as 700. If it is say 3000 retail outlets, it will count as 3000 retail outlets. It could be a chain of say 10 schools, you pick up from 10 schools, it will be counted as 10. The number of pickup points from where we pick up cash.
Sure. Let's say you're adding 1200 points every month, correct? In a month, let's say you cover less number of points, so will it affect your growth?
Yes, of course.
It's entirely dependent on the touch points.
You page 5, diversified revenues.
That's right.
E-commerce and e-com logistics accounts for about 25%.
That's right.
What percentage is this growing?
It's growing at a very healthy pace, definitely higher than our
normal. So, e-commerce is not a threat to you, it's actually
it's a 50% of e-commerce in tier 1 location is cash on delivery. Cash on delivery is 90% in tier 4 locations. So, how the cash finds its way to the bank? What do we get? Right? So, e-commerce is a strong tailwind for us.
50%
in tier 1 and it is 90% in tier 4 locations. Cash on delivery.
So e-com companies and others, cash managers are extremely critical activity for them.
I don't know, I have not tracked the US companies, but in US, as you mentioned in your presentation, almost 77% is non-cash transaction. How is, you said one company in US, how is that played out?
I'll give you an example, like what happened, say in Boston, did a due diligence there. Now 85% of US is organized retail. Of that, as Frost and Sullivan, 67% is using some form of retail cash management service provider or the other. They do have a service provider doing the pickup for them. So, as you've seen, 72% is digitized and 28% is cash. See, for us, what you all have to understand is that cash for us is a commodity, just like any other commodity. Cash picked up. So, therefore, the 28% there, some amount of cash and coins are getting accumulated at every counter, even in the most developed city like Boston. So there, every single one of them has a tie-up with the service provider. Like what happens in the evening, they come, and then the custodians go and they pick up a sealed bag from each counter. So in the greater Boston area, there are 8,000 pickup points of this nature, because nobody there, nobody wants to handle their cash on their own. So it is picked up and then it's got a chip. And when that is presented in a wallet, it's presented to a reader, automatically the transaction happens and that money gets transferred into that individual designated account of that individual. So there the level of development is very high. And we are seeing that happening here also in tier 1 locations now. So it's not the volume of cash, but the fact that the commodity is getting generated in every outlet and requires management. And that's what we are doing. And as time goes on, this will become, as organized retail is now only 15-20% here, likely to grow very rapidly.
Let me get your comments on this. Cash in circulation is growing, but I noticed that in India, people use less and less cash. Just to give an example, my office is in India Boots. And I use a cafeteria for lunch. And I probably think it's used by 300-400 people. And I moved from the US, so I was using cash for about 2 weeks. Manager took notice of it and told me nobody uses cash here. And you have a credit card. And so think about it. People use less and less cash even for their lunch. And how do you answer that?
My problem is I'm sitting in the wrong location. This tier 1 location here, you know, to fight the mindset of everybody is very difficult for me. See, when I function in the tier 3, tier 4 locations, but nobody's heard about anything. We have multiple NDAs. Now here, many people say that my buyer has got a QR code and all that. I mean, it may be happening. The fact is that parallelly, and even in tier 1 locations, there is a parallel transaction which is happening. And if you come to my wallet, if you come to, you know, the amount of cash that's getting generated is quite a bit. It's a parallel track. I'm giving you factual examples as what we are facing in terms of cash and circulation. So these are parallel tracks that are happening. And here, I mean, I'm sure everybody in this room is using Google Pay. You know? So, you're colored by your own experience here. But we don't function here, we work in the, largely in the hinterland. That's how it translates.
What's your breakup of tier 1, 2, 3?
Tier 3 is 67% plus.
Tier 3.
Tier 3. Okay. Is 60, tier 3 plus is 67%.
Thank you.
Tier 2 plus is 85%. So
we
can make
out
here
1% Sure. So one question.
I just had one small point to make before. Obviously, slide 70. The crux of our financial performance is its operating leverage. You see, our revenue growth was in this quarter 19% revenue growth, 42% EBITDA growth, 53% PAT growth. We see 9 months, 27% revenue growth, 60% EBITDA growth, and 73% PAT growth. That's because a good part of our costs are fixed costs. Any incremental revenue adds significantly to the bottom line. So fairly high operating leverage business. Yeah, that's the limited point of it. Sorry, you have a question.
No, I was just trying to understand, you know,
is our pricing margin strategy different from different tiers, like tier 1, tier 2, tier 3? Would the pricing strategy with banks be different? Or the margins be different?
No, no. Margins as well as pricing is not different.
Maybe the cost associated would be lower.
This is the categorization.
Okay.
See, cost of servicing in single point would be lower, but then the density of points is also lower. Makes sense. 1,100 crores.
Sorry,
just ask them to stop recording.
I'll do it.